Welcome, everybody, to the SI Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina, joined by my producer, Lou Pellegrino. Lou, how's it going?
It's going really well. How are you?
It's going well for me. Mets still doing well for you, though. Two losses, but still got to be happy.
Very happy. They're the best. It's the, you know, 12-4 is a pretty, going into today, 12-4 is a pretty good record to have.
Yankees are a mess because of Giancarlo Stanton going 3-for-35 at home, but no one's interested in that. You're interested in the SI Media Podcast, so we have a good show today. We're going to start things off with media reporter Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. Marchand is breaking every big media story these days. Had a scoop this week about Brett Favre trying out for Monday Night Football. So I know on the SI Media Podcast in the past you're used to roundtables. I'm going to try, though, see how it goes, get one guest. Well, we'll do the roundtable still, don't get me wrong. But if I don't have a roundtable that week, I do want to get a media person on just to talk about what's in the news in terms of sports media. And Marchand is perfect for that. I want him really to become a regular on the show because he does have so many good stories. What do you got, Lou?
I was just going to ask you only because you know, you're talking about Brett Favre and the whole Monday Night Football tryout thing. The first thing that jumped into my head, and you could ask Andrew this if you feel like it, but I want your opinion on it. You're in a fantasy football league, and everybody's drafting, and then there's that one guy who takes a defense, and then everybody starts taking defenses, and there's always that one guy who starts the chain reaction.
Right, just the run, yeah.
Okay. The success that Phil Simms has had in the booth, and now you see what Tony Romo, somebody who's away from the game, not too far removed from the game.
Right.
The success that he had with Jim Nantz and everybody on social media talking about, oh my God, look at the way Tony Romo calls a game and, you know, sets up plays and knows plays are going to happen before they even happen. Now you see that, then Peyton Manning, his name gets thrown out there saying, you know, some of the big networks are trying to get him, and now Brett Favre.
Right. Well, the Favre thing is different because the Romo thing was, it was a rare case where a guy went from the field one year into the booth to the top broadcast team the next year. Favre's been out of the league so a while, so it's not a, it's a different situation than Romo. And networks are always going to want ex-players, so especially quarterbacks.
Right. I just feel that now all of a sudden it's going to be, well, let's see what quarterback is available. Who are we going to be the ratings boon? You know, we're going to get a ratings boon because of this guy.
Yeah, I think they just want a big name. I mean, I think that's more, it's a big name more than anything.
So poor Dan Orlovsky's not going to get.
He's not getting a Monday Night Football job. No. Definitely not. Not Monday Night Football. It might be like the Fox, like sixth team, but, you know, you got to start somewhere.
On the Ocho.
Yeah. So Martian's going to talk about all that stuff. We'll do a breakdown of the news. And then after that, interview with Rich Eisen of the NFL Network, who has the NFL draft next week. And it's interesting because that will be simulcast on Fox as well as the NFL Network. And Rich is also part of the NFL Network's 2-hour show on the schedule, NFL schedule release. So that's, I don't know, that says it all about the NFL power. So Andrew Marchand first on sports media news, and then Rich Eisen after that with a fun interview on this week's SI Sports Media Podcast. Let's go right now to Andrew Marchand. You ready? 3, 2, 1. Okay, joining me now is media reporter from the New York Post, Andrew Marchand. Andrew, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Jimmy?
I'm doing well. I told people in the intro of this podcast, I haven't even told you yet, I want to make you a regular here on this podcast and go to you for some take on sports media news since you seem to be breaking every story.
You put me on the spot. Yeah. On the air, I got
to
respond.
Yeah, so you have, so you have to tell me you'll be a regular.
We'll have to negotiate.
Yeah, we're making you a regular. So speaking of breaking stories, this week you reported that Brett Favre had tried out for Monday Night Football with a bunch of other people. It seems like, I don't know why that job is so hard to fill. And Favre, in ESPN's eyes, Favre did not hit a home run. What can you tell us anything more about what was in your story? Any details emerge from that? Why wasn't ESPN thrilled with Favre?
Yeah, I was just told he didn't do great. So how that's defined is, you know, the eye of the beholder. But here's the thing overall, is that, you know, Favre wasn't definitely convinced that he wanted to do it. And ESPN wasn't definitely convinced that they wanted Favre. Now, after they struck out on Peyton Manning, you say, well, who else can give some sizzle? Who's the biggest name out there? And I think when you think about it and you look at the available TV free agents or potential ex-players, the guy who really sticks out, I think, would be Brett Favre because of what he accomplished and who he is and his personality. I mean, he has a good personality. So you know, they kick the tires on it. He, in the past, has not shown a full inclination that he wants to do that, that he wants to be an analyst. But then for ESPN, he had two factors. Number one, his audition didn't do that great in the audition, according to my sources. And then secondly, which I think was a factor, was he does have the Me Too thing with the situation that he created with Jen Sturger.
Right.
So you put those two things together, and it didn't make sense, especially when he didn't hit home run in the tryout.
I didn't think of the Me Too thing there, and it's interesting because I guess it would make it tough for people who have a past like Favre's to get a job. But as you know, there are so many ex-athletes who have jobs who probably, ESPN just got in bed with Kobe, for instance. So
well, here's the thing. I'm not saying that with whole second. Let me just
right.
Let me clarify,
I understand.
Though,
it's a factor.
It's not. It wasn't. It was a factor. I don't think it wasn't like they could. They have. If they felt like Brett Favre's the guy. We're going to give him $6.5 million that John Gruden just gave up to become the Raiders coach. Then you factor it all in, and they say, let's do this. But I do think it was a factor in their decision making when they informed Favre that they were going to move on, and that he wasn't being pursued anymore. And then he tweeted out later, in which I felt like he basically confirmed the story. He did say that, he thought it was a good meeting that he had with ESPN, which is fair, from his point of view.
The part of your story I found most fascinating was the Rex Ryan part, because he was so bad on that. And listen, you don't want to judge someone off one game. He was so bad in that season opener last year with Beth Mowins. I think it was Raiders, Broncos, and I guess it was the Sergio Dipp show, but he was terrible doing that game. So to give him the Monday night job would have really been shocking to me, at least. And he didn't really, do anything on the Sunday Countdown show either.
Yeah, I think more to me, the big red flag would be the Sunday Countdown show, more so than the one game on Monday night. He really didn't have a lot of, they put him in a tough spot. He didn't have a lot of broadcasting experience. He's working with someone in Beth Mowins he did not know very well. That is a difficult thing to just get thrown into that booth and, expect to hit a home run. Like we all just keep bringing up Tony Romo, and I think Tony Romo is very good. He's not the broadcasting messiah, but we all do bring him up.
Right.
And the thing about Romo, though, is that he really wanted to be a broadcaster, from what I've been told, for a long time. So he's been studying it. A lot of guys, they don't study it. They just sort of, get a nice check, and then they want to do it, and they think it's interesting to them, but they haven't studied it. And if you don't know the mechanics of it, to do a game like a Monday night game, opening weekend, that's a big spotlight. And he wasn't up to it, but I feel like people at ESPN, kind of think that he maybe has more potential. I personally think it's unlikely he'll get the job. Just I don't think he gives you the buzz factor at this point, a year in. And like you said, from what we've seen, do you really feel very confident that he'd be excellent in the booth? Guys change. I remember when the Mets got Ron Darling, people were killing him. He'd been a Nationals analyst, and he'd even talked with the head of SNY, Kirk Gowdy, and they both decided he wasn't ready for New York. But then I believe back then it was David Cone turned down the job. They turned to Darling, and now he's arguably the best baseball analyst there is. So, things can change.
Right.
And I think ESPN, that's why they're giving Rex a chance.
It's an interesting story about Cone and Darling. ESPN's in a tough spot because I feel they're paying so much money for that package. And I get why they want a Peyton Manning or a Brett Favre and a name like that. But I feel like they'd almost be better off going with a mid-level guy, one, to take pressure off. And two, no matter what ESPN says, no matter what they do, the reality is they're never going to have a great game every Monday, because the facts are the best game is going to go to Sunday night. The second best game is going to go to the 4:25 window, Fox CBS. And now Fox on Thursday night has come out and said they're getting a good schedule. Where does that leave ESPN? It's a it's a tough spot. And I guess, you know, you want to get a big name in there maybe to get the fringe fan. But I think you're better off just giving people a hardcore football guy. What are your thoughts on that?
It's twofold. You know, I was talking to one of a source the other day who was kind of saying, me, you, and Jimmy, agents, executives, people in the business, you know, we get all tied up on, you know what, Louis Riddick is a really good broadcaster, and he'd be good in that Monday night booth.
Right, give him the job. Yeah.
But his point was, though, the average fan isn't, you know, if you can get a C or better, the average fan is going to be, you know what, Brett Favre's doing the game, well, that's interesting to me. Yeah. Louis Riddick, you know, who's that? Now, for me, I think overall winning the booth and creating stars is a much better strategy overall than anything else. You know, if you look at your team, it's kind of similar to me, like the New York Yankees. Are they going to be better off if they're building with the Aaron Judges and the Gary Sanchez's who they're developing and then adding some stars around it? That makes sense. Now, so on Monday night, can you create a star? I think you can. I do think ESPN probably has to utilize these guys a little bit differently. I think if you're on 100 different shows and you're also on Monday night, it doesn't give you that star power. And, you know, they do, having worked there, it is a benefit. You know, it's something, you know, good that there's not necessarily, in all cases, a star system. But I do think when you talk about Monday night, I could see the why you'd want a star to get people in. That said, again, if it were me, I'd want to win the booth every week. Have the smartest, the best booth, and then develop into a star. Look what they've done with Herb Street. Look what they've done with Billis. Those guys are the two biggest guys in their sport. They weren't stars on the field. Look at Chris Collinsworth at NBC. I know it's been a long time, but he was a very good wide receiver with the Bengals, but he's not a Hall of Famer. And you go on, and I think that's where you got to win the booth, and that's why they're auditioning everybody under the sun to try to find who they can find.
That's ultimately the point. Being a great player, being a great coach doesn't make you great on TV. Now, listen, in some cases it works out, and in some cases it doesn't. That's why I think for this, Louis Riddick would be perfect. And like you said, he's not going to draw in the fringe fan. But really, unless that big name, Favre, Manning, are great, they're not going to draw the fringe fan anyway. They'll draw people initially to see, let me check this out. And if it, you know, that's what happened with Romo. I think then it became, people were tuning in a little bit here and there, I think, just to see how good Romo was. But, I think also that goes away. Like next year, people are not going to be watching games to see Romo now. It's not new anymore. It's not something, you know, they haven't gotten enough of.
And I think your big issue with the big name, too, if someone is a C, D, or F, an A to F scale, that's an issue. If you're Emmitt Smith, kind of Emmitt Smith was a little bit before social media, I believe, when he was struggling so much. I mean, Emmitt Smith now with Twitter and Vines and Instagram and train of thoughts, I mean, he'd be in trouble, you know, so even more trouble than he was, and it was a big deal back then. So I think you have to be careful with that.
Can you imagine Dennis Miller now? That would be the good one.
Dennis Miller, he'd be getting, you know, so it's a different, you have to be careful that if you go star, that they're going to be at least a C or better. And if they're less than that, then you have some issues.
Today's episode of the SI Media Podcast is sponsored by Hims. Did you guys know that 66% of men lose their hair by age 35? And the thing is, by the time you really start to notice hair loss, it is too late. It's easier to keep your hair than to replace the hair you've lost. Do you have any bald spots? Is your hairline moving further and further back? What happens in a year from now if you keep losing your hair? Well, we have a solution for you. 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with the real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat your hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science only. No waiting room. No awkward doctor's visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. It is so easy. All you have to do, answer a few quick questions, and a doctor will review and prescribe you. And to make it even easier on you, all of the products are shipped directly to your door. Now, order now. My listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today. Right now only while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/media. That's 4hims, forhims.com/media. 4hims.com/media. All right, moving on to another topic. It was a big deal 2 weeks ago, I guess. Quieted down a little bit last week. Haven't heard anything about it this week. But the ratings for ESPN's morning show Get Up, not strong out of the gate. No improvement really over what SportsCenter was doing. They haven't really built from their first day. It's amazing. You wouldn't think people would care so much about a morning sports television show, but I get people all the time being like, I can't tell you how many people have asked me in the past couple weeks, how long do you think it'll last? How long do you think it'll last? How long do you think it'll last? How long do you think it'll last, Andrew?
I think it has some legs to it. It's not going anywhere. Yeah. I mean, they have so much money invested. I do think they're going to rearrange the chairs a little bit. Not saying they're getting rid of anybody yet, but that how the show is formatted, they're going to switch that up. And I do think, you know, you could see them, trying different things. They're going to have to, because, you know, I wrote about this. You know, what does Get Up give you? You know, what is it selling? Why do I turn to ESPN for Get Up when, if I want, you know, the NFL, you have the NFL this morning show, or whatever, it's Good Morning NFL.
Good Morning show. Good Morning Football.
Yeah, whatever, right, good. Good Morning Football. and then you have the MLB has a show. Everybody, so if you want specific sports, ESPN doesn't dominate that realm like it did 15 years ago. Now you can get to what you want. So if I want a certain sport, I can go there. People have been accustomed to turning on SportsCenter in the morning. Now they've gone 180 degrees different in terms of what you're getting. So you turn on ESPN at 7 o'clock in the morning, you're used to getting SportsCenter, so it's an instant flip off the channel. So the initial, like, I'm not a big ratings, I'll write about ratings sometimes. I'm not writing about, I mean, I think it bores me to death, bores people to death.
You'll write about them with Michael Kay and Mike and Carlin,
I did
Maggie
write about
and Bart.
It, so we'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
That is true.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. But the bottom, but I didn't say I wouldn't.
No, I'm kidding. I'm busting your chops.
Is the phone working? Okay. Because I didn't say I wouldn't write about them. Right. I'm just saying it's not, I just don't think people, I don't think people who cover it really barely understand rating, let alone the people who are reading. So that said, so the first week ratings, I think if I'm ESPN, I'm more concerned about the content. If you're, you know, what do your eyes say? And do your eyes say this is a good show, this has potential, and maybe it does. But to me, they're trying to sell personality, and I just don't know which, you know, I said before, Beatle maybe a little bit, you know, I would tune in maybe for Beatle as part of an ensemble. For me, Greenberg's, you know, he's a very solid TV person, but is he someone I have to hear his opinion? For me personally, no. Jalen Rose, you know, same thing, limited in terms of how many sports can you talk about. You know, he's a basketball guy. He knows things about other sports and has done shows. So, you know, I'm not, when I say he's a basketball guy, I think it's stupid when people say, like, a professional athlete can't talk about other sports. It's ridiculous because some layman who never played professional sports can. They can. But there's an expertise associated with being a pro athlete. He has that in basketball. Other sports, not as much. And so when you tune into that show, you're tuning in, I think, for personality. So they have to mesh. It has to really be a fun show. You know, they haven't gotten that vibe. It's been only a couple of weeks, so you got to give them a chance. But $15 million, it's 15, whatever it is.
14, the, 14.6. Yeah. But here's where I would push back a little bit about the ratings and maybe it not being important and it's early on. I think the rating coming out being lower than SportsCenter the previous week, the previous year, I mean, by every metric, it was down. It didn't help the show get any buzz or word of mouth. And I think, and listen, that takes a long time. Like you mentioned Good Morning Football. And I feel like it's taken that, it took that show maybe a year, year and a half. And that there's a lot of buzz around it, a lot of good word of mouth about it. And I think that helps a show grow. From day one, from minute one, it seemed like the Get Up was nothing but negativity. There was no there was no buzz and everything about it was negative. People with issues with Greenberg. I thought Michelle Beadle was universally loved. I found out on Twitter that is far from the case, I guess, because of her politics. And
also, nobody in the world's universally loved, Jimmy. Come on.
Well, that is true. I should say she was very popular. I guess she still is. But I didn't think there was a lot of hate out there for her. And then I realized, just from feedback I got on Twitter, that there is, I guess, because of her being anti-Trump or whatever. Everything around the show seems to be negative. And I think that's, including the ratings, and I think that all snowballs into a bigger problem. Because how are you supposed to grow? And that got sort of proven out because they never went up week by week, day by day, the ratings. But it is early,
yes,
like you said.
I do think you have to, and I think Clay Travis wrote about this. I know ESPN loves Clay Travis, but he made this point, I think, first, if I'm not mistaken, at least what I saw. Obviously, I'm sure somebody in the world somewhere else did. Everyone takes credit, whatever you say, something like that. But I know ESPN hates Clay Travis, you know, et cetera. But I do think he made one very good point in a column he wrote, is that when you turn on that TV and you're expecting SportsCenter, and instead you get Up, that's a click off. I mean, that is a very different program. And I think that is something that, I don't know how you change that when you change a program, but that is something that I do think is a factor. And to win those people back, I feel like I'll make a little analogy. My Twitter followers, I think, again, I don't know them, but I think I'm watching my Twitter followers because I would assume before I had mostly Yankee Twitter followers, and that's where my following came from. And now, you know, it's switching where I'm not tweeting about the Yankees. I'm tweeting about sports media. So, you know, where my Twitter followers go, I'm sure I've lost. You know, I don't subscribe to any service to find out. But I'm sure I've lost a lot of people who are like, yeah, I want to hear about Aaron Judge,
right?
You know, not about Joe Buck.
Yeah, but then you get people who are interested in sports media.
Exactly. So no, they're right. Going up. So it's a good news for me. Better.
Do you
want to? I'm doing better than Get Up.
Would you like to give out your Twitter handle right now so people listening to this can follow?
I don't care. I will. At Andrew Morshan.
You care. Everyone pulls the whole bullshit. I don't care about Twitter, and we all care about it. So let's stop the game.
No, I know. I am paying attention. If it's going up or not, it's going up. So that's a good sign.
There you go. Add Andrew Marshan.
I also have a skill, Jimmy. I should tell you a little personal information.
Go ahead.
You can get this. I might have mentioned to you this. I feel like I might have mentioned this before, but I can guess almost anyone's Twitter followers without looking at what they have. Like, I'm not going to say I'm 100%, but I can score good. I have references. After the show, I can point you to something.
No, we're going to do it. We're going to do it right now on the show. I'm going to ad lib right here.
Okay.
All right, let me scroll. I mean, I wasn't expecting. Well, let's see. Andrew Marshan, you have 50,000 Twitter followers. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, let me throw out a name here. Wow, I don't follow a ton of Bill Simmons. Go. I'll give you 3 seconds.
Bill Simmons.
So you can't look it up.
I'm
one.
Gonna go. No, I'm not going to look it up. All right, I'm going to say 5.5 million.
6 million. So that's not a terrible.
I think if you round up, that's 6 million.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take that as a one for one. As long as that's a win.
All right, we'll do a best of three. One more, two more. Bob Lee.
All right.
I'm on the bees of who I follow on Twitter. So.
Bob Lee is a tough one because
you're looking it up.
No, I'm not. I swear my life, I'm not looking
okay.
it up.
Okay. All right.
It's not that important, Jimmy. It's not that important to me. I mean, Bob Lee's gonna be. I'm just thinking. Bob Lee, I will go, you know, your national guy. I'll go 100. I'm not feeling good on this one. 127,000.
Wow. What an insult to the great Bob Lee. 204,000.
I was in the ballpark. He's a very difficult. That's a tough one. Three, one.
All right.
The national.
Listen, you came on here and bragged about your ability.
Well, hold on a second. I went in 70,000. The guy went. It's not a great number.
Within 70.
Not a great number.
Don't brag about. All right, last one. We'll do. That's a good one. I don't follow him. Lou Pellegrino picked this one out. I don't even know his followers because I don't follow him, and I would never follow him. And this will segue into our next topic. A-Rod
is not a good follow, but he's a good follow. It's kind of comedy. I'm gonna go A-Rod.
Wait.
He's probably grown a lot recently, but I'm going to go 1.1 million.
I'll go, because I don't follow him, I'll go 2.2 million. What's the answer, Lou?
It is 1.24 million followers.
All right. Look, that's impressive. All right. Not bad, Marshawn. Take a bow.
This wasn't Plan B. This type of entertainment cannot be planned.
Listen, it was fun. Now, let's get to A-Rod. Right. What are your thoughts on A-Rod on Sunday night?
He's been solid. He's definitely been solid.
Now, I got the vibe from the Mets-Nationals game 2 weeks ago that from now, again, we're judging on Twitter, which you have to take with a grain of salt. But I saw a lot of frustration for people that it was the A-Rod show and not Mets.
It is the A-Rod show.
Okay.
It's Ask A-Rod. That's what the whole program is. All of ESPN's baseball now about A-Rod. People, they care about baseball more. John Skipper wasn't a big baseball guy, so they care about baseball more because of A-Rod. And so, yeah, the whole show's about Ask A-Rod. It's hard to figure out where Jessica Mendoza fits in because of, A-Rod's accomplishment in baseball. Jessica is an Olympic gold medal softball player, hard worker, nice. But, there's an imbalance in there that you have to try to figure out, and you don't want it just to be Ask A-Rod when they're both supposed to be co-analysts. So that is a difficult thing in a three-person booth. But A-Rod's been solid. I don't think he's not reinventing the wheel. I know A-Rod and have listened to him more than most people in terms of him talking about baseball. So some of the stuff I know. So I think I gotta take that out of it and say for the average fan, I think he's been pretty good.
Okay.
I think he's been pretty good, very solid, pretty good.
All right, fair enough. And then before I let you go, let's wrap this up with, there's gonna be hardcore New York stuff here. So if you're out there listening, you don't care about New York, you can go to the Rich Eisen portion of the podcast after this. But okay, so Michael K beats Chris Carlin, Maggie Gray, Bart Scott. He never beat Francesa, beats him for the first book of 2018. Now, a couple of things. Kay's ratings, though, if I'm not mistaken, correct me here, they didn't necessarily go up. It was just that the fan ratings went down. Is that accurate?
They all went down. So
right.
The sports genre across the country, at least in New York, went down.
So even without the sports pope there, Kay's ratings went down.
It's hard. Ratings are difficult. First off, radio ratings are ridiculous. They're not very accurate, quite honestly. But number one. Number two, though, is that, well, it depends what you're comparing. You're comparing it to this this time last year, to the last book, this past, winter, when or fall book. So it's hard. There's different ways to look at it.
Right.
But overall, sports did not do well.
Right.
And if Mike was here, he probably wouldn't have done well, because if you look at the storylines, and this is the excuses they gave, and I think they're legit. When I talked to the radio executives over there, and at the stations, is that the genre, there weren't that many controversial things. Teams were bad, etc.
The Pope would not like that comment. So basically, here's what I'm getting at with that. How you win, you win, and you win, you should be proud, take a bow. But how much of a victory is it for Kay that he beat them?
Bittersweet. No doubt.
Yeah.
Bittersweet, because they wanted Francesa. They did beat him in one month last year, and they were gaining ground on Francesa. Now, these radio readings, they go up, they go down, they're weird. But ultimately, here's the thing. I used to say this when I worked in radio. The longer the email, the worse the ratings. So, but what you said is exactly right. That top line, who won? That's who won.
Right.
We didn't win, but in 18 to 34, men who left home early and didn't go to college. We did, they can break it down and we killed after. You know what I mean? That means you lost.
But
you start breaking it down deeper and deeper. So
right.
Ultimately, the winner was Kay.
Right, by a slim margin.
Yes.
What do you got, Lou?
Very easy comparison here. It's a very simple comparison. Michael Kay's show, and I have friends on that show. Don LaGreca and I have worked together. I love Donnie. He's one of the greatest guys ever. He's a good friend. They're the 1994 New York Knicks. There's always going to be, You didn't get to the finals by beating Jordan, and that's exactly how it is.
I disagree from this standpoint. If they come out and win the next book and increase their
Win's a win. Like you said, you got to beat who's in front of you. It's not Michael Kay's show's fault and ESPN New York's Radio New York's fault that Francesa's no longer there. But you never beat the big guy. You never beat the big guy.
I don't think they can worry about that. Andrew, what do you think?
I mean, I think they probably. I don't think they should. If it were me, I'd be like, all right, I never beat it. You know, if I'm Michael Kay, I'm making more than $1 million on the Voice of the Yankees, and now I have the most listened to sports radio show in New York. I feel pretty good about myself.
I would too.
And that would be me.
Give me your prediction though for how the next book will play out, because now you have baseball and the Yankees are on the fan. You're going to get some carryover, I think, there, which helps them. What do you think?
Definitely.
Yeah.
That helps them. They also have a few day games that will help them in the ratings. That kind of will sneak their rating up a little bit, because they'll get the Yankees for a few times where they'll be going against K-List, K-Show, and they'll have the Yankees on the air, which people will listen to, and their ratings will be good for those days. But the problem with the show, in my opinion, is that I'm talking about CMB, Carlin, Maggie, and Bart, is that there's just no baseball expertise. Can Carlin and Maggie talk baseball? Do they know about baseball? Yes. And I've covered baseball for a long time, so when I'm listening, I probably know a little bit more about the Yankees or how things work than, you know, the average fan.
Right.
Not that, you know, not that I know everything, but but they don't have, like, they just say things, you know, that just aren't accurate. Like, they're just wrong. Like, they're wrong. They're not, like, terrible. They're not calling, saying there's only two strikes, but they're just saying things that aren't, they just wouldn't happen, you know, just aren't right. And so it's like they were discussing on Wednesday that if they move Giancarlo Stanton down to fifth or sixth, they're thinking, it's like, yeah, if they do it, they're going to do it to try to relax him. He starts hitting, they'll move him back to the cleanup. You know, it's simple, or third.
So that doesn't seem...
It's not complicated.
Right.
It's not a big deal. It's a deal in that, like, he got moved down the order because he strikes out every bat, and then he starts hitting, they'll move him back up, and they've done it a number of times. And they don't have that easy knowledge that I think you need if you're going to have that slot in terms of baseball.
Right.
Now, could they be entertaining football-wise? And I think it's the same thing we were talking about with Get Up. So when you talk about Carlin and Maggie, they have to win on personality, because opinion doesn't really win the day. You know, Mike and Chris, they grew up in a time where there was no internet, when they really were successful. So their voices were even louder, because not everyone has a voice. Now everybody, and I mean everybody, has a voice.
Right.
And so your opinion doesn't really have that much strength to it. It's not that important. I got to listen to one. So how do you make it stand out? Well, either you have expertise or you have personality. So I think they're going to have to win getting that show to mesh together, so it's just enjoyable, people laughing, a fun show to listen to. And Bart, as good as he is on football, and I think he's excellent, when he's talking football, my ears are glued. He is just as bad on baseball, so they have to figure that out as well.
All right, I gotta tune in and hear that over the summer. I'm curious to see if he gets better with the baseball, or if it's still bad.
I don't see how he does though. I mean, I get it. He's trying. I know he's trying. I'm told he's trying, and I get it. And it's just something though. You just can't just get up to speed as much as you try. It's nothing against him. He's a hard worker. He's to me, his personality seems good on the air. But at the end of the day, it just doesn't work. There's too much, the people who are listening are too fluent in the sport to just get up to speed and try to pick up the New York baseball scene just like that. It just doesn't, especially when you're on talk radio for 4.5 hours, you gotta be fluent. It has to be your second language. You can't be, you're trying to learn it.
I don't know why, but I have a feeling fans gonna win the next ratings book. Just a prediction you'll hear right here. All right. Now,
all right, we'll replay this.
Replay this, yes. Last but not least, since you talk to him all the time and you're best friends with him, what the hell is going on with Mike Francesa? For 19 months, we heard April 1st. April 1st, I can't talk about it till April 1st. Well, now it's April 16th, 15th, 18th, whatever it is.
Every
what is going on
every
with
every
the
day?
What is going on with the Pope?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on one thing. I won't come out till maybe next week. But,
there you go. I told you, Andrew breaks every story. There it is.
No, I don't know about that. No, it's not what he's doing. Oh, okay. Anyways, but we'll see. But the bottom line is I don't really think he knows what he's doing.
Which is amazing because he had 19 months to figure it out.
Well, I don't think it's but he wants a lot of money.
Of course.
He's very difficult to work with.
Yeah.
He's 64. Yep. If you listen to him the last couple of years, he hasn't been the same Mike Francesa. Like, could he, in a big spot where he ripped McAdoo, is that a good listen? Yes. But I do feel like the last couple of years, for people like you and me, it's really like the entertainment part is the guy who like, he says something, and then you're on Twitter, and you look at Mike Francesa, you know, the Twitter impersonator, and you're like laughing because that guy says it's funnier, and you know Mike's being serious. So does he still have some fastballs to throw? Yeah, I think he probably does, but he's going to have to pick his spots. And here's the thing. Now I say this, and I want to make sure this is crystal clear, is that I do think, you know, there's a good chance that ultimately between his star power and what he's accomplished, and the fact that he has CAA on his side, that he will find something. And what that is,
he's going to find something. I don't think that's the question.
What money? That's the question.
That's right. As I've said, I think on this podcast, I may have said it the first time you were on. I was told by a very good source, Sirius offered him 3 days a week, Monday, Fridays with Russo, and a Sunday NFL show on their NFL channel, and he turned it down because of the money. And
yeah.
I think that's probably a lot of what's been going on. I think he's probably taken aback by the fact that he can't generate the money he thought he could after what he's done at the Fan. But the whole sports media landscape is different now. I do think it's kind of a bad look that it's April 18th and we still don't know what he's doing.
Of course it's a bad look.
Yeah.
I mean, and then he's trying to figure it out. Now, again, like I said, he'll figure out something eventually, but I don't think it's as easy. And I wrote about this, you know, when my first story about him is that, you know, then he's bringing in CAA, you know, and he said to me, you don't know, I've been signed to anything. And then the day the story came out, you know, he was at the Big East tournament with the head of CAA.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is the fact that he hadn't had an agent in a while and then he brought in CAA is an indication he can't do this on his own. And so to me, I think the other thing is he's talked about this for years. He like wants to reinvent broadcasting, and it just can't do. Like, could he do a show on the internet? I mean, you know, like a podcast, which is probably where he ultimately should be doing, is some sort of podcast. But you know, CAA has the ability to create like a company, and I could see him doing something like that maybe. But then mixing in where he'll do a show here, show there, with some people. Eventually he'll do something, but he's, in my opinion, he's having trouble. He would tell you, Andrew, you don't know what I'm doing. You don't know anything.
That's pretty much sums it up. How many times a day do you get asked, what's Mike going to do?
I don't know. I mean, a few times, but now, I've written about it a few times. Now it's sort of dying down, but people are interested when he figures it out. What he wants to do. The thing is, though, it's just, I just don't think it's going to be like the ultimate thing he probably should do is something with Chris, you know,
exactly.
Once or twice a week.
Exactly.
And that's it.
Amen.
And then he could say, I retired and now I'm doing once or twice a week with Chris. But the thing is, I don't know if his ego will allow him to just kind of go back to Chris. You know, they those two have bad
blood.
It's
a weird.
They can say whatever they want.
Yeah. It's a weird thing.
They love
thing.
Each other on the air, but they have bad blood, those two.
It's a weird thing. Like, he left the Fan, but now he's trying to get the money that he got at the Fan. And he can't. I don't know. It's a weird thing. But
he should just stay at the Fan.
Exactly. And if he would have wanted to stay at the Fan instead of doing 1 to 6:30, which is an absurd show for one man to do, if he would have said to the Fan, give me 3 to 6, they would have said yes in a heartbeat. So they could have worked it out if they wanted to. All right. I appreciate the time. Are you breaking any stories this week? You had Favre. I'm saying, is there something we should be looking out for? You don't have to say what it is. You know, obviously, I'm not asking.
Yeah, I know. I can't, cash me so say. I can't say. Can't say, wouldn't say.
So that means something's coming.
I'm working on things.
Something is coming. Andrew Marchand, at Andrew Marchand on Twitter. He's breaking something this week. I can feel it, so follow him. And
Jimmy Traina has 62,000 Twitter followers. I didn't look.
It's something like that. Yeah, good guess. Yeah. All right, well, we'll play another round of this the next time you're on. Like I said, you're now a regular, whether you knew it or not. So thank you for coming on.
We'll see, we'll see. All right.
Thank you, Jimmy. Take it easy. All right, before we get to Rich Eisen of the NFL Network, let me tell you about another SI Media Podcast sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by Buffalo Wild Wings. There's a new boss in town at Buffalo Wild Wings, and he deals in bacon. It's the Bacon Boss Burger, featuring bacon three different ways and a blanket of white cheese sauce. And he's joined by other new favorites like the smothered cheese steak quesadilla, sweet chili shrimp, and Alaska cod classic. All pair perfectly with a Sam 76, a fruity ale with the crisp finish of a lager. Hurry in today and try them all before they're gone at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Available for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink responsibly. All right, joining me now, big week coming up for this guy, NFL Network's Rich Eisen. Rich, how are you?
James, how have you been? You good?
I am. Well, I'd be better if Giancarlo Stanton was not 3 for 35 at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, come on! You know it's a short. It's a long season.
I need the sun to come out already, so the ball starts.
Anthony Rizzo. Anthony Rizzo can't shorten it yet. Don't worry. It's a long season. I'm more concerned about the bullpen. I mean, that is totally disintegrated.
Yes, it has.
It's unbelievable how poorly they've been playing. And the Red Sox are on fire.
Right.
That has been unbelievable as well. But it's a long season, brother.
I chalk it all up to the crazy schedule, the weather. It's been, you know, rainouts, this and that. I was expecting after two rainouts against Detroit Saturday and Sunday, I think I said to myself, all right, two rainouts. Going to get a little healthy here. Hicks is back. Get the bullpen rested. Marlins come in for two games, blow them out, go on a winning streak, and then didn't work out that way. Yeah,
I know. And then Tanaka, you know, that didn't look very good either. But like I said, it's a long season. It's way too early to say that Aaron Boone doesn't know how to manage. We'll see how it looks. If this the way it looks in July, that they're only a couple of games above 500, they're hovering. Then I will be in genuine concern.
I'm not worried about Stan, but 3 for 35 at home is ugly. Downright ugly.
Well, look, I mean, I think it can all be blamed on the home run call, don't you think? Stanton's not even Italian, you know, and Sterling called an Italian instructor for some help.
Nobody loves John more than me, but that
I know
not
that.
his finest work. I hate this. It kills me to say.
Well, you know. He came on my show
right.
2 weeks before the season, and we gave him two good ones. We gave him two good ones, and he used one of them within days in spring training, which is Giancarlo gets a Stanton ovation. He used that. The other one that we gave him to use is that Giancarlo hits it a Stanton. He did not like that. He dispatched that one. A little bit
like
too fast
that.
For my lightning.
I like that more than Stantonian blast.
Yeah, he uses that's his what he Giancarlo hits it a Stanton, or he gets a Stanton ovation. Brandon Drury going out has also put a pin in the other one that we gave him that when Judge, you know, knocks in Drury, you know, that it would be using the few good men line, you know, ladies and gentlemen of the Drury, you know, all rise, Judge Knox and Drury, all that stuff.
Maybe you're to blame for this because you put too much pressure on John. John calling Berlitz to get help for a home run call is.
Now, he said already, but when he came on, that he'd already done that.
Oh, Joe, geez.
So, of course, you know, saying that it was going to be some Italian phrase. You know, we thought it would have something to do with pop culture. We had no idea, like, he legitimately would take something from a Berlitz instructor. Like, that was nuts.
And how about, we're spending way too much time on this, but how about the fact that he then lands another call in Italian, this time a song to sing, and Stan hasn't hit home run since then.
Which one was that? That one I hadn't heard.
The Non Dimenticare. You didn't hear this story? Goodness.
Yeah. But he's not Italian, though.
Right.
You know?
Well, John don't
he's
care.
Not even. He's not even Italian. And he was named Mike when he was here in Southern California. You know, so it doesn't really work on many levels. Quite like the actual Stanton so far.
God love John.
I'm just so glad I don't have to hear him do the solarte.
That was the worst. I'm down with any singing on a home run call.
Oh God, no!
Sing all you want, John. That's my motto.
How you enjoying this gig now that Deitch ran off to the other country?
I'm enjoying it thoroughly. He's still in this country, I think, until June.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think in June he becomes a Canadian. But
Okay. Listen,
we're all, thanks to Twitter, we're all together forever.
Does that mean when he goes to Canada, his takes become like 3% stronger? Is that what that means?
Possibly. I mean, listen.
Like the beer?
I don't think you can have stronger takes than Richard Deitch.
So, but now so technically, are you the now Sports Illustrated media critic? You're the one who'll be watching me on draft night and giving me a whatever rating. Now, are you into those ratings, into the letter ratings?
I'm more of a. I said this on the first podcast, which someone got very upset about on Twitter, but I don't want to say the name because then it becomes a thing. But I said on the first podcast, I approach this. Richard did a phenomenal job. He approached it as a reporter. I approach it more as a fan. So okay. I'm not going to really do grades. I'm more of like, I like this. I didn't like this. This was good. This was bad. And I've always written about media stuff. So this for people who have followed me on SI.com, if they read Hot Clicks back in the day, they read Train of Thoughts now. I've always done it. So it's nothing that's out of left field or new.
Oh, okay. So I don't really have to kiss your ass then, is what you're saying.
No, absolutely. Please. That would be the last thing I would need. So here,
I think Deitch wanted a little ring kissing.
All right. Well, how about this? I will now throw something at you to go the opposite of kissing your ass, and I'll be like a hardcore media guy. Like, I'll be a Deitch right now.
Okay.
How do you defend a 2-hour special for a schedule release show on the NFL Network? A 2-hour special with calls to Rich Eisen from fans breaking down the schedule, I might add.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Look. No, okay.
You have the floor.
Now, here we go. When the NFL Network first started, this was the show that we were most made the fun of, that we were made fun of for the most. Because most of this information is already known. We know who plays who.
Right.
And we know who plays who where. We just don't know who plays who where and when. And we just don't know who plays who, where, and when, and how.
Right.
And the when and how is pretty damn crucial for a lot. For weddings, for bar mitzvahs, for vacations, for fall planning. And the how is, you know, kind of inside baseball a little bit for podcasts like this one to see how the Thursday night schedule looks and a Sunday night schedule looks and a Monday night schedule looks for the industry. But then in terms of wins and losses, every single year we're always talking about December schedules every year, always. And it just doesn't obviously have a ton of heat in April. And part of the reason why we got a lot of grief is because, you know, not to go all Aaron Rodgers on you here, but, you know, I wasn't asked by those in management at the time about what would work and what would not.
Right.
You know, that we would send reporters to, like, bars, sports bars, right? Like, anybody was going to go out and get a schedule and grab a beer over it, right? Nobody's doing that. Instead, we would have, you know, a reporter standing there in a bar in D.C. with a Caps game on or a Wizards game on. People most likely miserable about it in the area. But, and to me, it was kind of, one year we even had like a studio audience to show, like nobody celebrates paperwork, right?
Right.
So to me, that's why I pitched the idea last year, and I greatly appreciate, you know, NFL Network management hearing it, that the best way to get the reaction from a fan about the schedule, whether they thought they're screwed or not, or I'm excited about this game because I'm going to be there for, you know, I do this every year with my buddies, or my wife and I are going to celebrate because this is where we got engaged, all that stuff, the visceral reaction, the best way to get it is from a phone call. And what show takes a phone call? Well, a daily sports talk, radio, TV simulcast like my show. So we did it last year, and I'll do some other interviews like I would be as a host from our Culver City studios, but I'll be in my El Segundo studios on the campus of AT&T tomorrow night and take phone calls, and the phone lines are lit, and fans are fired up to talk about it. So that all together,
right.
And plus when someone like Philip Rivers comes on, obviously having a conversation with Philip will go over his schedule, but he's one of the guests we have. I will ask him, like, what, you know, have the Chargers told him about maybe drafting a quarterback? What would he think?
Right.
Might be one of the questions if I have time for it. I might even go down the road about Aaron Rodgers. Like, Aaron Rodgers, it seems like he would like to have some input. What about you in Los Angeles? You know, I mean, that's the way to go about it. And if I have enough time, we'll do it. But that's my spiel. I don't know if I convinced you or not about for 2 hours. And also ESPN began doing it.
Right.
After
of course.
We were made fun of, they started doing it.
Of course.
And every year, though, there in New York City, the Pope would always have it snuck to him by somebody with the Jets and Giants.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that he's gone now. maybe whoever's there in New York now, you know, the folks who do his show, the afternoon show now, won't have the same contact.
I'm just busting chops. I actually listen, if you're the NFL,
struck a nerve, Jimmy.
I know, clearly. But I have to say, I got into this with people on Twitter last night. It's an easy thing for people to mock, but I do think, and the truth of the matter is, it's a no-brainer for the NFL Network. I mean, it's your network, it's your product, you promote it, 2 hours of live TV. I would have one legitimate criticism, and it's not for you, it's really for the network. I wish they did this last week instead of this week, because on Thursday night of this week, you have, I think, 3 NBA playoff games. Last week, we had no playoff games, nothing going on. This would have been nice last Wednesday or Thursday.
No, I know. I hear you. There's no sense of that, to be very honest with you. It's like the cake is done when it's done.
Right.
To be very honest with you, I heard that the schedule was first presented to the commissioner earlier this week. You know, Roger Goodell looks at it. He literally is the guy who, you know, gives it a thumbs up to release.
Right.
And we at the NFL Network, it's been an annual thing where we don't find out, okay, it's time for you to go and put a show together, literally until 24 hours before.
So
that's and 1 year the NFL did it during draft week. 1 year the NFL did it the week after the draft, which is completely anticlimactic. But again, it is such a monster schedule to put together for all sorts of logistical reasons that sometimes includes, like, you know, when the Pope tours the country, you know, some of the stadiums are used for One Direction tour.
The real Pope, not Mike Frank.
Yes. Because I have mentioned two popes in this conversation.
This was the real Pope, yes.
The actual pontiff,
yes.
Correct.
So wait, do you know right now, like, have you seen the schedule? Oh, you have not. So you don't know right now.
I should get a PDF, a few hours before. And honestly, sworn on the hair of children to not do anything with it.
Right.
And I wouldn't because there's no reason. I don't need the personal gain on my Twitter account to be the first to break it, you know, but that it's not necessary. It really isn't. It's a very important venture for the NFL Network. It really is. And I respect it and I appreciate it. It's as big for us as the combine. It really is. And everything else. And then comes the draft, which, you know, everybody at the network is rightfully fired up about, because we're simulcast on a broadcast network for the first time.
Yep.
And that wouldn't have happened if our product was substandard.
Well, I mean, no one thinks an NFL product is substandard. I mean,
hey, look, I mean, a show could be, you know, if our version of it was, Fox has to like it to put it on.
Well, let me get
to that. At least that's the way we're looking at it.
Yeah. So, okay. So the draft will be simulcast NFL Network and Fox, and you have Aikman, Mayock, Daniel Jeremiah with yourself hosting.
No, I will be on the main set, if you will, or the inside set with me, Mayock, Daniel Jeremiah, and I think for the fifth or sixth straight year, David Shaw of Stanford.
So where's Aikman in this?
Aikman is on the outside set with Mariucci and Steve Smith.
Okay. So
obviously with all of these quarterbacks, I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, Aikman's been at a ton of pro days. So he's locked in.
Yeah.
and prepared.
I think that's a good guy to hear from. First of all, this draft, you have to be more excited for this draft than most drafts in the past, I would assume, because this one really has a lot going on.
It's number one.
Yeah.
I've been fortunate enough to be doing this, covering the draft. You know, 2005 was the first year the NFL Network was like fully up and running and long enough to handle covering a draft, but we did it from our Los Angeles studios. That was the year that we kind of, you know, turned off. We taped everything and put Total Access to bed at the end of the first day, round three during the compensatory picks, until Mike Shanahan chose Maurice Claret at the very end of that first day, and it was like, you know, Trading Places, where we were all screaming, "Turn the machines back on!" And we scrambled the Jets and totally reconfigured our show, and that was wild. But 2006 was the first year that we covered it pick for pick in Radio City Music Hall, across the way from ESPN, where we went legitimately toe-to-toe with ESPN as another outlet that's covering the draft live in studio, in person, for pick for pick. So I've been fortunate enough to do this now. What is this now? I guess my 15th draft. And I've never had a level of excitement about a draft quite like this one.
Yeah.
With all of the quarterback prospects, with one team like the Cleveland Browns having two of the top five picks,
right,
surrounding both New York teams, which mm-hmm. is so rare. Yep. Last time the Giants and Jets picked back-to-back this high was yep. when they chose Lawrence Taylor and the Jets chose Freeman McNeil. That's how long it's been for that. Then you've got a pick number five owned by John Elway and the Denver Broncos, quarterback needy or not. The Colts sitting there at six with a absolute viable trade option for them to trade back down, because there's is anybody that wants to trade up to get a top flight quarterback in this year's draft, like say the Bills, or even if the Patriots want to shock the world and move all the way up, they've got to move close enough for the Giants at two, which is probably the spot that somebody would trade out to move back down. They've got to get the beachfront property either in the top five or right on the coast. So there's all sorts of intrigue here.
That's on top of all the great players you have coming out and all everything you mentioned. The Patriots are such a fascinating factor in this draft as well, which is has to be good for you and for business, because they have all these picks that they have accumulated.
And they need to restock. And the question is what is the Brady end game here? I mean, you're already hearing it right now. On the day that we're taping this, I'm assuming you're releasing it on this day, and if not, you know, it's the Wednesday where the story is that Brady, just by merely not showing up right now, has already done what he hasn't done before, late in the season, informing the Patriots that he's coming back, you know?
That story, though, was, I don't know.
I read your tweet. Like, there was nobody saying, it's like, look, the story did not say he's not coming back, right?
The story had nothing about him not coming back.
They didn't quote anybody saying he's definitely not coming back. Right. It's just that at this point in time, he's never gone this long leaving the Patriots to wonder if he's coming back or not. He's coming back.
There's no
question he's going to come back. That said, though, like, what is their next step? Could it be using one of those picks where they currently reside for somebody who has slid down that far? Could they use their picks later on in the draft, which is normally what they do, either in the second round for Garoppolo, obviously sixth for Brady? Could they go ahead and take somebody in that regard? I've got Trent Dilfer on tomorrow's show on my Rich Eisen show. He's so phenomenal at this, with knowing all these prospects from Elite 11 and now the Soul and Science show that's going to be on NFL Network now. So phenomenal at pegging which guy might be great for which program. He names a kid that's deep down in the draft who might be perfect for plug and play, actually, for New England in their offense. You'll tune into that Thursday, hopefully. But anyway, the reason I bring all this up is, again, you've got the top flight quarterbacks, you've got a top flight pass rusher in Bradley Chubb, you've got a top flight running back in Saquon Barkley, you've got two New York teams, you've got the Cleveland Browns that everybody thinks is going to screw it up. They've got two picks they could trade out. Denver could make a pick at quarterback for John Elway or trade out. Or there's Minka Fitzpatrick. There's tons of top players. And it's all going to be in a spot so tremendously large, you could have probably fit every single room that the draft has ever been in, outside of obviously Philadelphia's Ben Franklin Parkway, inside the stadium.
Yeah,
I mean, for an event that was born in a hotel conference room, and then moved to maybe what, the Felt Forum next to the Garden back in the day, or then Radio City Music Hall. I mean, this is going to be, I don't know what the hell it's going to look like. I have heard that inside the Jones Mahal, there will be sections for all 32 teams around the stage.
Oh, yes. Right. That sounds like an intriguing idea to break it up.
I mean, they're giving it a whirl. I mean, you gotta hand it to the NFL that they're just not going to sit and stand pat. And I think that the draft is probably going to rotate from city to city from here on out, with Canton, Ohio getting it real soon, Vegas, which would be insane.
That would be insane.
I mean, it's exciting. I'm genuinely fired up. And again, at the NFL Network, for a broadcast partner to now simulcast us, it's really, for somebody who's been there since day one, you know, the first voice in studio, it really is a crowning moment that I think all of us at the network kind of will pause and take in and feel rightfully excited about.
Wait, so when you heard that Fox was going to simulcast it, I assume from the second you heard that, you were thrilled with that announcement that you're going to be seen now on network television. It's weird that the draft is so big, but it was always a cable TV event. Now it's open to all these other people, which, you know, in this day and age, everyone thinks everyone, you know, has cable, but not always the case.
Right. Yeah, of course I was excited. You know, I mean, it's network TV, and as long as Fox would leave their hot takers at home, then I was particularly
excited.
There
you go. That's what I want.
You know? So.
You didn't want to be on the panel with Skip?
We've got Aikman out at part of night one, and I believe Joel Klatt, who's fantastic. I love having him on my show.
Yep.
He's there for night two. And I believe I'm lined up to do an Angels Yankees promo. You know, I'm fired up.
There you go.
You know, we got some of the Fox inventory, so that'll be great.
So,
and again, like I said, you know, network television, a partner for Thursday Night Football. It kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
You know, so we're excited about it.
So so I got you with the schedule before, but I will kiss your ass now. I always think, and I'm blown away every year by the NFL draft, NFL Network and ESPN both.
Yes.
In terms of, I think it seems like a very tough event to cover, and just the knowledge you have to have of the players, what school they went to, the high. I mean, I know it's all there for you. You have sheets and all this and that, but it moves very fast. Once things get rolling, what is the biggest challenge to do that event for you?
Oh gosh. It is beyond demanding. It's the toughest event I have to do.
How long do you
now
prep?
In terms of preparing for the players, the best thing is I host the combine, and 98% of the players, of the first three rounds of an NFL draft, 98% come from the combine.
Okay.
So I've already seen the first three rounds of the NFL draft.
Right.
I just don't know what order it was going to be in. So I've seen them. I know most of their stories from having sat next to Mike Mayock for the 4 days of the combine coverage. So
you know how to pronounce everyone's name properly?
Pretty much. I'm hooked on phonics. I'm ready to roll.
Okay.
So that's a big help. Talking, you know, as I'm able to do every day with the show on AT&T and Fox Sports Radio and all that, and I'm up to speed on what fans are interested in, totally up to speed on the storylines, totally up to speed on what certain picks, when they are made, mean for each team. It is just the logistics of it, because it does move fast. You know, Roger Goodell, one of the first things he did as commissioner, he sliced down the amount of time in the first round, and then made it a 3-day, 2-night event, which is terrific too. It moves really fast, and because the NFL does utilize the platform to promote certain things, like say its program with the Wounded Warriors, at one point that there will be a pick announced by several different people. There will be, I believe, a pick from a St. Jude Children's Research Hospital patient. So these are all things that need to be planned. And, you know, it's not as simple as the commissioner just walking up and making the announcement. And then there is ESPN will be in commercial break, will be on the air, or vice versa. We've got to wait for a pick. And so at one point, you know, invariably in the first hour or two of the draft, there will be like two or three picks in the chute yet to be announced. And, you know, pick six has yet to be announced, but team nine is on the clock, for instance.
Right.
And trying to keep that all straightened out. And I'm also not looking at my Twitter feed because I don't want to know. None of us want to know. Mayock and I and everybody on the set have made a specific, explicit decision that we want to be as surprised as you at home, assuming you don't know. Now, that may be old school.
Yeah.
That may be putting head in the sand, thinking that we're the most immediate dissemination or disseminator of information draft night, fully knowing that we are not. I get it. But I'm not on my Twitter feed. I'm not doing a wink and a nod. I don't want to be accused ever of tipping a pick and ruining it. Because for me to do that, again, I don't need like the personal kudo or feather in my cap on my Twitter account or whatever that I know first.
Well, you'd also get fired probably.
Well, I mean, look, because the bottom line is this, is it is a show.
Right.
It is a show. We are putting on a show. The league is putting on a show. We are doing this in a football stadium for a reason. It is a show. It is an experience, a spectacle, an event.
How do you feel, though? But how do you feel? Are you okay, though, with other reporters, obviously not associated with NFL Network, ESPN, on Twitter releasing the picks early?
Of course I have a problem with that, because we're all in the same boat here. We're all in the same boat here. Think about it, Jimmy. Think about it. You point out again, you wish the schedule release show was at a different time because there's so much sports going on, right?
Right.
As you and I are talking right now, by the time this posts, LeBron could be down in an 0-2 hole to Indiana. We're already talking about baseball season needs to be, you know, shortened because of all the weather. Ohtani this and Yankees, Red Sox that, blah, blah, blah. Hockey going on. I could go on and on here, okay? Right. But on Thursday night next week, everybody is going to stop to watch a 3.5-hour show basically reading off names on a list. That's what it is.
Right.
That's what it is. It's the only event on a sports calendar where the main participants aren't even in the building. And I'm not just meaning that Baker Mayfield's not showing up. The decision makers aren't even there. They're phoning it in. And in this day and age, we could just do this like a fantasy draft on an encrypted website, point and click on who you want and be done with this behind the scenes in 2.5 hours.
Right.
So if we're all doing this because it raises an interest level, it's of a golden sports television goose that benefits everybody. The fact that somebody's tweeting out that the pick's already made, right, that for what? So you get more followers for your account?
Well, but it's also their job. I mean, you could look
at it. Is it their job? I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe. Look, so let's put it this way.
Let me just say one thing.
I don't begrudge them.
Right.
I don't begrudge them. I just wish that, again, you know, if that is the way that this information is going to be disseminated, then draft night's done. It's finished.
Well, I'll say two things.
As a show.
I'll counter that. I'll say two things.
Okay.
You said the show is basically about a list.
Yes.
Well, I disagree from this standpoint. Ultimately, the list is the news, but it's become a thing where now the sideshow is a bit just as big a factor. What are people wearing? How hard is Roger Goodell going to get booed? Is Rich Eisen going to get caught live on the air telling, you know, a producer to be quiet? It's you know.
Wow, you're out there hoping that I have one of those Bill O'Reilly moments?
It happened to Berman, I think, one year. That's why I mentioned that one. I think that happened to Chris Berman.
Okay.
So I think the whole spectacle of it, now you have it in stadiums. There's fans going crazy. You know, every year at Radio City, the Jets fans became a theme of it. It's sure. more than just the list. I mean, the
well, again, the reason why we're all convening is there's a list of names and they're being read off right. one every 10 minutes. That's essentially right. what I'm saying. Now, right. obviously, that's the spectacle part of it that people are tuning in to enjoy. But there are some people that are essentially want to tune in just to find out what happened. And they can easily go to Twitter for that. And the reason why the NFL is one of the most popular sports of all time and may never, ever be taken out of that clubhouse position is because of shows like the one that ESPN and we at the NFL Network are putting on the air on next Thursday night. And if you don't have a dog in that hunt because you're not a partner of the NFL, well, guess what? Your bosses might want to be down the road. And that's all I'm saying is that we're trying to do something that I think is very important to keeping the sport's popularity where it is. And if you're out there just saying, oh, I know already, somebody, my buddy in the room just texted me and called me, and now it's 3 minutes before, so watch me. You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess that they're just trying to do theirs, but for me, trying to do what I'm doing, it works across purposes. So I guess I don't begrudge them. I just wish it didn't happen.
Well, the only other thing
also I say this too, last thing on this,
yep.
is that I also understand I might be that old man from the porch telling the kids to get off my lawn.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't necessarily.
I totally understand.
I don't even think it's that. I look at it this way, sort of. Let's say, I think last year something like 4 or 5 million people watched the NFL draft. I think that was combined maybe or something like that. Okay. The people, the reporters giving out picks early, that's happening on Twitter. And I think this is a case, just like everything else in the world, where every single one of us does it, me included, we put too much stock in Twitter. If the pick gets leaked on Twitter, it's okay. It's not going to hurt the NFL Network or ESPN. I really don't think. I mean, it's a Twitter thing.
I guess. I'm sure it might be out there on Facebook, too. I don't know.
Well, Facebook.
The reason why I bring it up, though, is that I definitely am not on. We specifically, because, look, when the phone call comes in, from a team, and again, this just shows you how ancient the process really is. The phone call comes in from a team to the draft floor. And by the way, I have asked of the NFL every single year I've been in part of this whole league, and the commissioner himself, that they've got to get the helmet phones back. I don't know where they went or why they went away.
I agree. And here's another thing why people, I think,
phones in the helmet.
And another thing people, I think, look for in the draft, I always want to see it, is the time running out on a team. When that clock's going and they're like, oh, 10 seconds left for the Vikings to make it, we want to see a team not get a pick. Because
miss it, right? Yes. Miss the deadline that happened a couple of years ago, as a matter of fact.
It was the Vikings, wasn't it?
The Vikings and the Ravens, I think.
Yes.
It was really freaky. But the phone call comes in, they write the name of the pick on a card, hand it to a runner, like the Pony Express runs to the stage, and they process it at the main desk, at which point both the NFL Network and ESPN trucks find out what the name of the pick is. So they can have their graphics package ready and the tapes ready and all that. So the truck knows. And we tell them, never tell us. Don't even get in the ear and say, get ready.
Right.
Or listen, like, hey, this is a big one. Hey, everybody, quiet down. Like, we don't even get that.
Oh, I think that's how you should do it. I think that's a good way for you to do it. I don't have a problem with NFL reporters on Twitter breaking it. But that's a good way for you to
do it. Well, look, thankfully, maybe I'm underestimating that there's more of you,
right,
Jimmy, than there is anybody else out there that you can watch the NFL draft with knowledge of the pick before it's announced.
And that's what everyone who's on Twitter does. I mean, we know the picks on Twitter. We still watch you guys, so.
Okay, great.
Now, so let me ask you, I'm not going to ask you what's more stressful, because obviously the show would be more, what's harder?
Yes.
The actual show, the first show Thursday night, or the prep you have to do for the show?
It's the show itself.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, the prep, look, we live it, right? I mean, we're on.
But how many?
We're plugged in. Like I said, I've seen that. And plus, it's not my job to tell you. Here's the way I view my job. My job is to handle the logistics appropriately, to let you know who's on the clock, who's coming up.
Yeah.
If this is a pick that involved a trade, let you know what the trade was to give you the perspective, because you've been hearing the storylines throughout the several weeks and months. You know, when the Browns are on the clock, of course, they'll remind everyone this is the Texan spot, this is the trade for Deshaun Watson. And then I've got to give my folks on the set their time to say their thing. because I'm not the expert on who these players are and what the fit is. That's right. Mayock, that's Daniel Jeremiah, that's everybody else who's on the set, and I want to make sure that they have their due. And then I have my job is to keep it entertaining and be somebody that you want to listen to for 3 days without wanting to throw something at the television set.
So give me an idea. I know you said you did the combine, but give me an idea after the combine, how much you prep in terms of how many days or how many hours a day, or
I'll be honest with you. I don't. I just know that my job is going to be on when I'm on the clock, and then just knowing, you know, obviously I'll review the players one more time. I mean, the NFL Network research staff sends me a book, I'll date myself, as thick as the Manhattan phone book.
Yeah.
You know, and it you know, I'll thumb through it on the flight. I'll look through it every now and then over the next week and a half just to refamiliarize myself with people who are like 4 and 5 on Mayock's positional draft board and those who might be a little bit beneath it. But like I said, when somebody gets picked, I'm not the one who's being looked to by people on the set or, I believe, anyone at home to tell you why this player is good and why this player is a fit. I think it is my job to spark a conversation if it is a reach. Another perfect example is when Kirk Cousins got drafted by Washington in the same draft as RG3. And when that happened, I'm like, let's stop the presses right here. Because why would you do this unless there is somebody at the top of the flowchart there that is second-guessing the RG3 pick?
Right.
Because why are you doubling up at the quarterback spot if Kirk Cousins starts? I said this on the air. If Kirk Cousins starts, that means something has gone horribly wrong with RG3.
And look what happened.
And by the way, it's like I had a freaking crystal ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, then Mayock's like, no, you can't have enough of these guys. And they started giving me some of the thought process of an evaluator or somebody who's a scout. And, you know, it sparked a very interesting conversation. So that's my job, is to sometimes, you know, hit the accelerator, on a conversation and make sure that it doesn't just go, well, here's analyst A saying his piece, B and C, and then now it's time for me to set up pick 3. You know, I mean, I just want to make sure it sounds like a conversation. And again, it's something that you're not like, okay, who is this D-bag? I just can't listen to this anymore. Certainly knowing that I want you to stay through to Mr. Irrelevant all the way on Saturday, and I'm going to be the guy to take you there.
Well, all right, so let me close on this. So we mentioned many times the NFL Network feed will be simulcast on Fox. Yes. Regular Fox, not FS1, your regular Fox station. How, factor that in, and how competitive are you with ESPN over this draft? Like, is it you when that Fox rating comes out combined with NFL Network, you desperately want to beat ESPN? It's, you look at it as more of a fun, friendly competition type of thing. How do you, because it is, I always found it bizarre that both, and then there was a report that like every network's going to air it, which would really be absurd, but what, how do you feel about the NFL Network ESPN competition with the draft?
When I first started doing this, I was honored. I'll be honest with you. I know how people might actually feel about him, but I was honored that I looked over my left shoulder in Radio City Music Hall and there was Chris Berman.
Right.
And there I was. And again, I would never at ESPN have gotten an opportunity to host an NFL draft while I was there at ESPN for SportsCenter or do anything in the NFL. So I really would take in my surroundings, and I'm like, okay, cool. That's Berman. He's been doing the draft ever since, you know, I was in college, and before that. And now here I am, have an opportunity to build something that's our own, you know, that I'm at the forefront of. And I took great pride, and I still do, in that. I am so lucky to have Mike Mayock at the end of the set. You have no idea. Do you ever see The Sting?
Of course.
You ever see The Sting? Yep. Sting is one of my favorite movies of all time, right? Yep. So you remember the scene in The Sting where it's the day for the big con. Big con's going to happen, and, you know, the muscle that Henry Gondorf, Paul Newman, hires to keep Robert Redford's character safe, right, to keep Johnny Hooker safe, comes in to the betting parlor that they've set up to get Lonergan's money. And Paul Newman looks at him thinking, uh-oh, something's wrong. And then Hooker walks in right behind him, and he just breathes a sigh of relief. That's the way I feel when Mike Mayock walks into the draft hall. I'm like, make sure he. One year he had his voice was shot.
Right.
I mean, this guy, we take our cue from him, and what his cue is, I know my stuff. I know what I know about these kids. I might not be right, and I will not know if I'm right for several years. But I'll just tell you what I think. And it's not like I'm the Holy Roman Emperor where I give you the thumbs up or the thumbs down, throw the pick to the Lions. And that has been our mantra from the beginning. And then the NFL Network production staff, from soup to nuts, they are awesome. We have a fun segment on our third day called Stump the Truck, where we have people tweet in names of players who from schools that I've never heard of, just to see if they have any tape and footage on the players. And we did that several years ago because, you know, you get a little slap happy in day three.
Right.
And it's really popular. And now we're including social media, which obviously management loves. So we have fun and we take it seriously. And it's our own thing. You know what I mean? It's our own thing. So
right.
I don't look at it like we're competing with ESPN at all.
Okay.
It's just they've done their thing. We're doing ours. If you prefer ours, if you prefer theirs, what can I do? I'm just going about my business, you know, looking around, pinching myself that, you know, now with Berman no longer doing it, I can't believe that I'm free to say that I'm the guy who's done it the longest, which I never thought I'd ever be able to say.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly will go there and pinch myself being in that stadium and be fired up. I'm really excited, and I take the responsibility of so many NFL Network people perhaps looking to me to lead the way, but I'm the one who looks to Mayock to do that, and thank God he's there too. And DJ is great. Charles Davis is great. David Shaw is just phenomenal. He brings just a great combination of knowledge from obviously knowing these kids from the college game, but he spent many years in the Ravens organization. He knows what's being thought in draft rooms. He's terrific, and I'm fired up that Aikman's now involved. Mooch is great. Steve Smith is a star in the making in the media business. So add it with Fox, and you know I would love to have an Empire read. I hope they give me an Empire read for the draft. I hope we get one of those. That'd be fun. You know, I'm really genuinely excited, Jimmy.
You
that's
make
the way
what if you have
I'm,
to do?
I'm being genuine about it.
Well, it's very politically.
Not like I've been disingenuous this entire time at
very,
all.
Very,
but I really feel it.
Very politically correct answer. I was kind of hoping you say.
How is that politically correct?
I would have liked to have heard you say, I want to kick ESPN's ass.
No, look, no, hold on a second. Now look. By the way, this is a great interviewing skill right there.
Thank
by
you.
Challenging me.
Yes.
Almost, look, borderline insulting me. Borderline insulting me. Okay,
I
got it.
Just being honest.
Borderline insulting me, but you didn't fully, like, you know, right. It's not like the C-note from the Rosado brothers. Okay?
It wasn't like I was just, all right, gotta go. That's the end of the interview. I'm giving you a chance to say you want to kick ESPN's ass.
No, no, but here's, I'm very competitive.
Right.
The most competitive I am, though, involves Sunday morning.
Right.
I am a very, very competitive person. When it comes to, look, you've got two choices for the draft. On Sunday morning, you have so many choices about what you choose, and I am rabid. I want to beat everybody in our business on Sunday morning. The draft, I also look. The draft, I still feel, even with a network, our ratings deck is somewhat stacked against us. We're still a baby when
right.
it comes to hosting a draft. We still are. When it compared to ESPN, they invented it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would love to beat them, of course.
All right.
Of course I would
all
love
right.
to. But that's not – I'm not getting in the chair thinking, put my ear in. I'm like, you know, I am going to hand Wingo his freaking lunch tonight. I'm like, I'm not – that is not – that
I
plus
you.
I plus, you know, I know a lot of them. I
of
love
course.
Schefter like a brother,
yeah.
right? So I'm not that way. But Sunday morning, though, that's a different story.
Okay. We'll get you back
Sunday
on.
Sunday morning, game day morning, you know, I'm really rabid about that.
I will get you back on in September to talk trash about the competitors on the
yeah,
pregame shows.
I'm like Ray Lewis coming out of the smoke at 9 a.m. Eastern time every single Sunday morning.
All right. Hopefully Well, we got the NFL draft begins Thursday. NFL Network and Fox. You have two choices. Yes. Mm-hmm. Rich will be on both.
That's right.
Hopefully, you don't have to read a promo for Undisputed on FS1. We'll give you Empire instead.
By the way, if I am handed, I'm not even going to go there.
Yeah.
But I don't believe I will be handed any FS1 split screen hashtag argument material during the draft.
Yeah. Who's better, Tom Brady?
But I do believe I've got an Ohtani versus the Yankees promo, which I'll be fired up to read.
I would love to have heard you have to be like, you know, who's better, Tom Brady or Jimmy Garoppolo? Tomorrow on Undisputed. Check it out, FS1. 8 a.m. or whatever the hell that stupid show is.
Oh, my God. Is the reason why LeBron doesn't have 40,000 points because he passed too much when the game was on the line?
We have LeBron ranked 88th best player in NBA history. Find out tomorrow on Undisputed Wyatt.
Yeah, 7 a.m. There you have it.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Good luck with everything.
Hey, same to you, Jimmy. And, same to you, man.
Thank you. And don't get mad at people putting out the picks there early. It's going to happen.
I guess the reason why it gets to me is that people think that I know already, and they're looking at me as if I'm broadcasting in a disingenuous manner.
Well,
because
hopefully,
all I want is the kudos of letting everybody know I know already. That's the dumbest supposition about the way I go about my business.
Well, hopefully this will clear it up. Because I'm definitely going
to
promote this as hear me and Rich Eisen argue about whether picks should be tipped.
Yeah, how are you going to promote this?
Just like
that. I bashed FS1? Are you going to use that?
No. Maybe a little bit.
Well, we'll see. Look, hey, man. It's a window into the way you're going to operate what Deitch handed off to you, man.
You didn't bash FS1, though. You didn't say anything.
I don't think I did.
No, not at all. I will promote it as Rich Eisen is anti-tipping picks, and he explains why.
Okay. Well, you could dress it up a little bit more. A little bit more clickbait for this one.
All right.
I'll retweet it. I'll give it a retweet.
I appreciate that. Good luck next week. All right. Take care.
Okay, bud.
Bye-bye. All right. Good time there with Rich Eisen. He very passionate. Very passionate. And I don't blame him for being fired up with the NFL draft airing on Fox as well as the NFL Network. Big opportunity for them. And Rich will be seen in many households across the country during the draft. So my thanks to Andrew Marchand and Rich Eisen. That wraps up this edition of the SI Media Podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe when you listen. And also, good interviews in the archives there. Jeff Van Gundy last week was great if you haven't checked that out. And appreciate it if you listen to that. Give a review, subscribe, and all that good stuff on the SI Media Podcast. I'm Jimmy Trina. See you next week.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.